There's two major things we need to talk about. One, the final exchange between Wilson and Matt, but two, the crazy lack of awareness from that doctor. Wow, this is Friends from Work. Let's get going. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by myself, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. I am not really kidding. I can't believe that doctor. First of all, okay, we're talking about Daredevil Born Again, season 2, episode 6 today. The doctor in the very beginning, first of all, the weirdest doctor. I'm sitting with my wife, who's a physical therapist, and I said, is this normal? And Annika's like, I've never heard a doctor talk like this ever in my life. So first of all, the fact that he would like go in there, and I almost couldn't tell if it was satire. Like, were they trying to make him so goofy? He was like the beautiful darkness. And it's been my sad honor to be a part of her death with you. I'm like, first of all, no doctor would ever talk about that. But then second of all, the crazy lack of self-awareness to say that to Fisk. Like, you just watched this dude kill a guy, essentially publicly televised in the boxing ring with two punches. And now you're going to go say you're happy to be a part of his wife's death and then try to go for a hug? What the actual?
No,
so I couldn't believe it.
I was watching it with Candace, and one, you know, they made a point to introduce that doctor last episode and to be like, oh, he's the best and I'm optimistic. And
yeah, right.
Like, no reason to be optimistic. She's going to be fine.
Yeah, right.
And it was like, well, this is clearly not going to end well. And then when he walked back in and Fisk was just sitting by the bed, I told Candace, like, no.
This isn't going to work.
This guy's dead for sure.
And it's going to be horrific in some way.
And then the thing about that,
How about me last week, by the way, on our podcast clip, I said he might not actually be safe at this point. Remember, I like called out like that doctor's probably not going to make it before this happened.
Oh, right.
Last week. Like, yeah, that's going to still change. He's still going to get killed.
I think too, one thing this episode did well was make you really feel for Fisk, because, you know, again, they've shown how important that relationship is to him and to us. Like, Vanessa and Fisk has been, I mean, what, since episode one, that's been like a piece of the Daredevil show. And so you feel that, but at the same time, you have to keep stepping back and saying like, yeah, but he has killed so many people, including now like one of the best surgeons, I guess, in the state.
Right.
So however many people that surgeon can't now save. So they like, it's this tension of like, D'Onofrio does such a great job making you feel like actually sympathize with him and feel that loss, to the point where when people get to City Hall and they're like, no, like, you know, she's part of the problem. Like, we're not going to mourn Vanessa. You're like, ow, like that feels dark.
Feels cold. Yeah.
But then again, like, she's the reason that Foggy died, you know, and like she and Wilson never shed a tear over all the people that they killed. So it's a complicated thing, even that scene. But to go back to your comment, it is absolutely wild that that doctor thought that that exchange was going to go any differently.
I know. Again, the lack of self-awareness. All right, here's our first impressions.
What do you think?
I like it.
I know, it's great, right?
Another!
It was everything for everyone.
Yes, I think it works.
So you're kind of actually getting at this already. I want to talk about the very last exchange with Matthew and Fisk, where Fisk goes down into like the dungeon or whatever, and he's staring at the painting. He's so defeated. I loved so much about everything about this scene. I loved there are a couple of visual cues, which I saw some people post online, straight from comics, the shadow of the Daredevil horns, highlighting Fisk's face. And then the knee to his head is the Devil's Reign cover, which our friend Tanner posted and tagged us in. I also loved so much that they just started by talking. And for a second, my wife and I were almost giddy, and this is going to sound so backwards because it's an action show. We were almost giddy about them actually just solving it right then and there. Like I thought for a second, they might actually work this out. And I thought it was really high level, good dialogue about we're both a poison. Mm-hmm. We clearly both see this can't work, right? And this is what I want to get at though. We've talked about this so much on the show. That last line from Wilson, which is, what are you going to do? You can't imprison me.
Yeah.
And you won't kill me. So like, it's literally the Joker and Batman. Like we're just destined to do this forever. And, that's the whole point of Daredevil. I felt the same way. I kind of agreed with Wilson. Yeah. I'm like, what is the point of this? I guess like we can keep punching each other. What's the point of it? The only point of it, I guess, is that Wilson actually finishes the job and kills Daredevil, but it's never going to go the other way around. Obviously that this whole debate comes to a head with Karen this episode where she's kind of losing it because of what you were joking about, how many people have died because of this.
Right.
And so that's also how I feel about the show in general going forward. We talked about this. How long can they make this be the focal point? Like there isn't an end because neither person can budge. So how long can you make this dramatically interesting? And they did again here, but I'm just saying, are we going to do this for 4 more years? Are we doing this for 1 more year? Are we doing this for 2 more episodes? Like at some point there has to be another plot line. But as of now, it's a perfect encapsulation of how I feel. We're trapped and there's nothing. There's no solution to this story, which makes the end of this season incredibly intriguing because I have no idea where they're going to go with it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I even thought maybe they were going to talk them off a ledge for a second. But you know what I mean? That line from Wilson summed up the whole thing for me.
Well, and it was a nice... I mean, I think the last time we really saw them engage was that first diner scene in season one. Like I know they saw each other at the ball and everything, but the last time they really talked plainly to each other was when they were both agreeing, you know, Fisk is going to keep everything above board. And if he does, like Daredevil doesn't come back. And then they both cross those lines and now they're kind of back here again in a way that feels so reminiscent of the end of season one and the end of season three. And so, I thought the way that they handled it, both as the culmination of all these other confrontations, as the culmination of like their own journeys and like losses, where you see them both kind of. It's like neither of them are really happy or. Not that they would be happy, but neither of them are excited or super motivated or passionate about fighting each other in that moment. Like, they're almost kind of like, I mean, even I loved whenever the fight starts and Fisk is coming after him and Matt's just dodging it.
Not really fighting back.
Yeah. It's sort of this effortless, like it actually reminded me of that, of like the moment in Quantumania at the very end when
we just watched.
When Scott punches Kang and he kind of has the condescending smile and then he like comes back where there was this kind of like, okay. And obviously Fisk and Daredevil, that's not the dynamic because they're kind of evenly matched. But it was interesting seeing like normally by the time Matt finally gets to Fisk, he's so mad at him and he's so frustrated with the corruption and that nobody else sees it that you see him just in rage mode.
Right. That's why it was so cool to have them have the conversation too.
Yeah, it was. And even Fisk, like, you know, he gets triggered, I think, by Matt mentioning Vanessa. But after his kind of initial outburst.
Yeah.
Like you're right. Like the line there where he's just kind of recognizing the futility of it, especially now that Vanessa's gone, I think, because I think that was the only motivation he really had.
Right. What is his purpose? What's his goal? Fisk at this point. Like, I know Matt wants to stop him from doing these things so that the city can be more peaceful and people can live their lives and not be interfered with. But Fisk at this point, having lost Vanessa, I feel like there was most of him that wanted to conquer these worlds.
Yeah.
For her or with her. Like, so that someone else recognized it as well. And we've really only known him in that, like, through that lens, essentially, for a long time now. There was a few episodes for sure before she jumped on board. But I actually was surprised, and I guess pleasantly surprised, with how they handled Wilson in this episode. Because I thought once she died at the end of episode 5, this episode was going to be just him snapping. Like, now he goes out and kills everyone. I did not anticipate we were going to get a defeated Wilson. Like, he's looking out the window realizing all these people are mad about him as a mayor. And like what I'm doing didn't work. There's riots and like there's more vigilantes than ever because of this. And instead of like going out and just like killing everyone, he just retreats like out of depression. And I didn't see that coming and I loved it. So him just sitting downstairs being like, I don't, and then Matt saying, this isn't about New York, is it? Like, and he says, no, it's not. I don't know anymore. It's just like, wow, that I loved it. I loved
it was,
that.
Yeah, it was such a better story beat because it does. If that feels right, like you still see again, you see the moments of rage, like with the doctor when kind of Matt presses the button. But
what I was thinking though.
Right. No, and it feels like I'm sure at some point, you know, if he's confronted with Bullseye again, then I'm sure we'll see him go all out. But, you know, even Matt, you know, Matt had that line where he said, I think it was last episode, like, I was there. And, you know, for Fisk, that's enough for him to want to kill me just because of the proximity. And even that, you didn't really feel in the scene. And I like that. Like, it was... It really was. It was the kind of conversation that I often wish you would get in these kinds of shows, where it's just the stuff that's going unsaid, and you never have the time for the protagonist and antagonist to just unpack all of it. But like even Matt promising to leave New York, I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, do you think...
Just that he even offered that
as an option. Like, do you think he would even really do that? Like, is it really just Fisk that keeps him wanting to go? Like, you know, it was Muse that kind of brought him back out in the first place because he wanted to... Not like he was seeing people get killed and
I think he just knows it's so bad that this is the most important contribution he can make at this point. Matt's an interesting character to be looking at as well. Because it feels like in a lot of ways his character is an inverse of season 3 of Netflix Daredevil, in that, you know, in that season, Matt was the jaded one and ready to cross the line, deciding that this wasn't worth it. We probably should just kill Fisk until the final moment. And then he kind of has this breakthrough and decides he's not going to do it. But throughout this entire season, he has been the one that is reserved. Like, Karen, what has happened to you? Even the way he approached Fisk here with so much calm and offering to leave New York, this is a different Matt than we've had. It's not like a super, like, he's not on like a, he's not on like a revenge kick. Yes, I know he likes the fighting in the Daredevil outfit, which, by the way, he's been in the Daredevil costume for most of the season. I mean, it's been so glorious. And by the way, his black costume is fading and it's showing the red. But it's just remarkable to me that he hasn't basically lost his cool. He's the one that keeps being like, no, this is the plan. Karen, what has happened to you? Wilson, we got to do this. I just thought that was really interesting. We really haven't seen him like this.
No, I mean, it does feel like the first time he's been in an actual leadership role.
Yeah, that's right. That's the difference.
And I mean, even the very end with the Daredevil masks showing up at the City Hall protests, that is straight from the Zdarsky run when Daredevil kind of becomes the symbol, and around the same time that you're kind of having the Devil's Reign stuff. But for slightly different reasons. But it's like this is a piece of or a side of Daredevil that we've never seen, and we've never even really seen Matt want to embrace.
Right. Right.
And
but it now gets me intrigued for the future.
I know. And
like I want to see him embrace it with like Yelena. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think we should talk about that. We will actually have an interesting, just following up segment today.
I agree. And I have a great question. That's why I'm panicking. Where's my phone? Because I had a great question from a friend. Okay. Let's get into friendly feedback brought to you by our friends at Panelbound Comics, the best comic book provider you can find. They have been supporting this podcast for a long time. The best people. If you go to panelboundcomics.com and use our promo code FRIENDSFROMWORK, you can get discounted comics. The comics are already discounted, and you can get them even cheaper by using the promo code. Okay, we'll be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, the kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. But for others, juggling it all can be tough and can feel overwhelming, and counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting the days of sunshine. Both Robbie and I are looking forward to summer. My wife and I are going back to Michigan to visit our families, play some golf, and enjoy the beach there. Getting that time to recharge with our families really helps us thrive. And so we put an emphasis on self-care during that time, both Annika and I connecting, getting outdoors, spending time with our families, and just discussing what really matters in life. Well, I encourage you guys to build in time for yourselves this summer as well. Therapy can help people better understand their needs, feel more confident setting boundaries, and create a vision of summer that actually feels good. BetterHelp is here to help, and they are awesome. BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And they have quality, licensed therapists that are there to help you. BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up now and get 10% off at betterhelp.com. That's right. Check out betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
I'm very happy right now.
One more word. Please give me one.
Woo!
You over the top. Don't you see? I think I'm spot on.
All right, found my phone for the question. Okay, Robbie, what worked and what didn't work? I have a lot of what worked. Just some small notes here. Do you want to start with something outside of the major and first impressions we just did? Which is, by the way, my main takeaway. That's why we spent 15 minutes on that to start. Yeah. But
I would say one thing that worked really well for me was the Daniel Beebe stuff in this episode.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
I haven't disliked that stuff for the rest of the show, but I feel like it hadn't really materialized into anything substantial.
It wasn't like a highlight yet of the show.
Yeah. But I thought that was like a lot of subtlety from both of those actors.
Agreed.
Like the scene with her walking around his room, and there's just a that was done really artfully, because there's a world where they kind of hit us over the head with her feeling guilty for a specific reason, and there's too much dialogue, and it could kind of be like a show and or a tell and not show. But I think that they communicated so much just with looks from both of those actors, like the way he's looking before he blows out the birthday cake candles. And also, just on that note, that one transition from Daniel, where he's doing like the same, he like has the exact same pose as Fisk when it cuts to Fisk, and they're just continuing to kind of highlight some similarities, which is intriguing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that to me was something that worked well this time around.
I also love that it felt really appropriate, timely, and culturally appropriate. Like I feel like you on paper you have two people that are like see the world very differently. Mm-hmm. And because of their life decisions, BB choosing to leak these, you know, anti-Fisk stories, and because Daniel is now working for Fisk, like Daniel is also aware that Fisk and Buck are a problem with certain things. Like he's traumatized about what he just had to do. And like, I don't think Daniel likes that part of himself yet either. Now, maybe his loyalty can eventually trump that and, you know, he can like kind of push it down and ignore it. But he's uncomfortable with certain things, but he's in a role now where he's kind of stuck. And BB's uncomfortable with certain things, like when she actually gets to know him and meet his mother and see that he has like a child's room with pictures in it and stuff. She grows an empathy for him to the point where they almost kiss, but also realizing like, what are we doing? Because we're totally on opposite sides working against this thing, and we're both in trouble if something doesn't happen. But it just feels like very not that a lot of people in culture are going to get killed if they don't do something. But there's a like what it feels like to disagree and see the world from two totally different perspectives, but both feel stuck in it.
Yeah.
And you're never going to be able to change the other person's perspective. I don't know. Yes, it was acted well. I also just felt like it was timely, kind of.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we haven't talked about that very much. The whole season is definitely like, I think hitting the audience right where they are for the most part. If you're an average American watching this show, I'm not saying that Donald Trump is Wilson Fisk. I'm not trying to get political. I'm just saying there's like a heightened awareness of people that have less than and authority figures and power and politics and scandal and feeling afraid and riots and violence. And, you know, just, it feels like in general, you're not watching, you know, this is not like, you know, something super unrelatable is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
it feels very kind of poignant.
Some interesting questions about kind of what it looks like to resist and to fight against corruption and power that's wielded unjustly. And I think that's where a lot of the Matt Karen debates come in and Bullseye steps into that. And, you know, it's the kind of Frank Castle shadow over all of it. The trial with the swordsman, like there are some,
And now these two wrestling with their own like purpose, I guess, by the end of this episode. Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. Really? Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's something where sometimes I see things, one, that are trying too hard to be timely, and it's really difficult to do that because by the time you make the thing, it's moved on. But also it just feels, it feels manufactured. And I think this show has never felt like that, which I really appreciate. But I think part of that is because it's doing something that is both timely and also kind of universal. And so I think, again, that takes a lot of careful balancing. And so I think the way that they have done that throughout the whole season, to kind of like reiterate your point, it's not just that it is timely. I think that the way that they have done something timely is really impressive. And the way that they have not kind of given in to the instinct that I think a lot of these shows or movies can have to just like do the most on the nose thing. Even though, you know, I think, I'm sure some people think this is on the nose insofar as there is,
well, it's not as on the nose or it's not as forced, I guess, because it's from the source material. Like these are
right.
These are the interactions that the character, like this is a very accurate depiction of how I picture Wilson Fisk.
Yeah.
From any version, a comic, from the video games, from the old shows.
Right.
So like they're doing them justice. They're telling the right story. It just so happened that culture started reflecting this story, which it's not the other way around, I guess. It doesn't feel to me like they were like, oh, this is what's happening. Let's tell a story. This could work for Fisk, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Daredevil. It feels like it was kind of the inverse. Like, no, we got to tell this story. It's from Devil's Reign. And, you know, there's all
stuff. Well, yeah. I mean, and again, even just like the credit scene in Echo, you know, came out.
Yeah,
in
right.
what, January 2024? Yep. So it's not as though any of this is a reaction up. To...
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that has been handled with a lot of sensitivity.
Okay, fun to see Jessica Jones again.
Yes, wow. How have we not talked about Jessica Jones yet?
She has a child. And did we know that she has a child from her show?
So, okay.
Like by season 3 of her show, did she have a child? Or was that news to people?
I think that's news. So I never watched season 3 of that show. I watched the first 2 seasons. And the second season was... It broke me. But I thought you had said from the episode you and Neil did that...
Well,
she had a kid in the 3rd season, or maybe it was hinted at in the 3rd season. But
he was telling me. So he was recapping season 2 and 3. And by the very end, I can't remember. I have to listen to it again. If he was saying that they do have a kid, or he was saying it's hinted at because she has a kid in the comics.
Right. And so that is true. And in the comics, I think it's Danielle is the name that we got in the show, right? For her mm-hmm. daughter. And that is the name of her daughter in the comics that she has with Luke Cage.
Yeah, so Danielle Cage, yeah.
It does seem like they're doing that. Now, I don't know if we're supposed to get a Mike Coulter or not.
Oh, but it definitely, again, not to be crass here, but the child was also mixed race. So I think they were, I don't think you choose that unless you're trying to be like, yeah, it was with Luke Cage. Right. So, yeah. So that's happening. Now I'd have to, again, I didn't see the 3rd season and I haven't read those comics as to like, does that become anything plot line wise? Like, is that a key point or is it just, hey, she's a mom now, which I thought, I don't know if this is unique, but they introduced this idea that she can lose her powers a la Spider-Man 3 because she's a mom. Like ever since she became a mom, I said, Annika, I had to double take that punch on Powell for a second because I didn't know if, okay, let me tell you 2 funny stories real quick. For a second, I thought that Powell just resisted the punch. And then I thought for a second, are they smuggling in like Tombstone? You remember in Spider-Man, the video game there's a side mission of Tombstone where he has like the gas that makes those people basically invulnerable to punches and stuff. And I know Luke Cage, you know, his whole thing is that his skin is impenetrable.
Yeah.
So for a second, I was like, wait a second. Are they trying to hint at, like, this is a connection to Brand New Day with Tombstone because he's going to be in that movie. And this is like, they're not only just bringing in weapons, they're also bringing in, like, chemical weapons. And Powell has already used it and become, like, somewhat of a super soldier. Not super soldier, but, like, you know, impenetrable skin. And then after all of that thought process, I went back and I think all it is that she lost her power, I guess, for a punch. But even that is weird because when Daredevil knocks him out, first of all, he hits him on the head. It makes a weird sound. It makes a sound as if it's like metal on metal, as if I'm right about Tombstone. Go back and listen. It's like a ping when he hits him, which I just thought was interesting. I thought it would be more of a like a thud.
I just figured it was like...
The batons
made some contact with his helmet or something as well. But
yeah, that is what it is. I'm just saying at first I was like, oh, what? But then, the second thing is I thought that, okay, when she said she lost her powers, I thought that meant like on a day-to-day basis. I didn't know that meant on a minute-to-minute basis. Like, I have strength. I don't have strength.
I know that does create some real risks in the moment, which is the point. You know, it adds some stakes. But
right. She could be in serious trouble.
Yeah, a couple things. One, you obviously meant Spider-Man 2, not Spider-Man 3. As we've said before, there is no Spider-Man 3. There are just two Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, and they're both really perfect, and those are the only ones, you know?
Excuse me. That's my bad.
Second, it is like her having a daughter. I'm sure I haven't read these comics if they exist. I'm at some point, if it hasn't already happened, she is going to kind of be a young Avenger type hero in her own right. But
Danielle,
all the comics I've read, she's still staying as a baby. And I think it's more interesting that way because it is more about the way it changes Jessica and Luke's relationship and their roles as superheroes. And it kind of changes the way that Jessica wants to engage with the world and how much she wants to go and be out there on the front lines. And it you see a lot of that with Luke too. Like, and I think a lot of the Devil's Reign narrative ending with Luke becoming mayor, you see a lot of this push to not, like, he doesn't want to just be the strong guy superhero anymore. So I think it is an important comic plot beat in that it changes both of those characters a lot for the better, and I think adds some good layers.
Yep.
I am always a fan of
real life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I always like when that can be enough, when you don't have to then create something where, like, every baby doesn't have to be Franklin Richards.
Mm-hmm.
So I do hope that they do something more with that. But lastly,
it's also undeniable, by the way, that this is the phase we're in. Every MCU legend is now having kids on screen. I mean, so we're clearly setting up kind of like the next generation of what it looks like for these characters to get old, age out, and then have, in some cases, superpowered children.
Which does make sense because, I mean, I was in high school when Iron Man came out, you know, and now I have a baby and I'm like one of the last people in my...
Yeah, don't make me... Yeah,
you know, we're getting friend old. Group. But yeah, so I think the only... I like the hiccup with her powers dropping out. There is a part of me, though, and it's comics, right? And you just can't go down this road. But I was just trying to figure out the mechanics of that a little bit, you know, like there's something about with Spider-Man, you know, it's they kind of call it mental and psychosomatic, and it's him not being able to shoot the webs. And but I think the idea is that it's still in there. He's just kind of wrestling with whether he really wants the powers. And maybe that's something that they're doing here, but it doesn't really feel like that's what they're exploring thematically as much. But I'm just thinking how, like, physiologically, what is happening that allows her to, in one moment, like, punch through steel and then the next moment not? Like, at a cellular level, I'm just curious how her powers are supposed to work. And again, it's...
As Stan Lee would say, the power cosmic, right?
Right, right. You know. Yeah.
This is the power Jessica. That's how it happens, okay?
There's you're right. And it's all sci-fi and whatever, but there's something mentally to me that would make it easier for me to imagine, like, Luke Cage's powers dropping in and out. Like, I can imagine something where, like, his skin now becomes, like, porous, like if they inject him with something. But I guess it's just already a strange thing where, like, anytime you have the super strong people that don't have any kind of sign of being a super strong person, like the super soldiers in Falcon Winter Soldier, where you don't have them bulk up and it's just like they look the exact same, but now they're crazy strong.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, there's sometimes like a disconnect for me where, like, yes, Steve Rogers is probably still stronger. Obviously, he's still stronger than Chris Evans is bulked up like that. So they're not saying that all of that comes from the muscle, but it at least makes it, or like with Fisk, like you can, even though he is doing things beyond what a person even that big would probably be able to do, it still helps you. Like it you know, connects the dots a little bit. And I think that's one thing that it was not, that's not a what what didn't work. It was just it's the first time I've ever gone down the power level type like rabbit hole that you haven't.
Okay, I have two thoughts on this, because in the Jessica Jones episode, Neil pointed that out specifically, that it always looks a little wonky just because she's a very like thin framed, you know, whatever. She's what, 5'6" small girl. So it's hard to, when she doesn't bulk up, you know, She-Hulk even gets away with it, right? Because she gets huge and gets strong.
Yeah.
But like if she punches somebody, it's a lot of her going like, and then the guy going and flying way back. And there's just something about it that looks a little weird, because it's like hard to believe. You didn't see any change in her appearance. That being said, they handled it so much better here. I was looking for it. Like, one thing they can do, first of all, is they gave her props. Yeah. So instead of, like, in the Netflix show, is a lot of her just punching people, and it looks really weird. Go back and watch it. It looks weird. It's like, guys, like, she goes like this, and the guy goes like, oh! You know, like, you know, he does it himself. It's like, I could be the stuntman there. Right away, she comes in here, she grabs a box, throws it at a guy. Then she grabs a giant, like, board, and she's smacking people with it. I thought it looked so much better than the Netflix show with her powers. I love the simultaneous kick and punch, that shot of both of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And then I also just want to say, this is the best action Daredevil's ever had. I need you, not just because it's like, not in like the writing of it and all that stuff, but just how it actually looks. Go back and watch. Please, I dare you right now, even go watch right now the famous Hall fight in season one.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch it now, was it executed awesome? Yes. Is it an awesome wonder? Yes. Is it cool to see Matt finally like engaging in this kind of activity? Yeah. I'm not saying that, but punches are faked. Like, punches are pulled. It clearly looks like set up, and I still love it. And there are times where I felt like in the showdown, even in season three between Fisk and Daredevil, same thing. There's some like and then it's not really landing. And I feel like in general, this show has kind of cracked the code on that. There's a lot of ways to handle it. Like, I noticed when I was watching Agent Carter, I think I said this, they just always like shake the camera and pan it away. So you really never can tell. It's like every time someone goes for a punch, it's like, we don't have budget to pull this off. So we just go, and then you can't tell what happened. Remarkably, I actually think that the Russos are incredible at this. Like, if you go back and watch the hallway fight, somehow, somehow the punches all feel like they're actually hitting the actors there. Like, like you feel the weight of it. I don't know how they're doing it. They do a lot of the, shaky, steady cam, like chasing somebody. I just said shaky and steady, but the cam chasing somebody.
Yeah.
But however they pull it off, it looks really good. Anyways, I'm not sure this is on that level, but this is the best Daredevil action. So that was my quick tangent to say, shout out to the guy choreographing these fights and making them feel believable and that the punches are actually landing.
Yeah. Who I do. I mean, you said this, it is the choreographer from the Netflix series. I guess season one. I don't know if they had the same choreographer every time.
I think it's been the same guy every time. So, that's maybe where I was wrong, but yeah.
That's about it.
Oh. And then Heather and Buck. I don't know if that's a what doesn't work. It's a really weird part of the show. So first of all, last night on Discord, just tons of sexual jokes from our audience about, you know, Buck enjoying being choked out here. No comment. As someone who just finished DTF St. Louis, no comment on this stuff. But then if it wasn't a sexual thing, that was a really weird way for her to process her trauma. If he was trying to actually help her, was strange. The whole scene was strange. So I guess a what didn't work. I'm still left grappling with what I watched.
I can't tell what they're doing with Heather, but they're definitely doing something, because they've stuck with it. It's been building towards something.
What was the takeaway from that? She was sad about Vanessa. She took the earring.
As part of
processing her trauma, she redoes it. I think they're setting up that she's going to be a serial killer. That's what they're setting up. And apparently at some point, Heather was Muse in the comics or something. I think that's what's happening. I really do. That, like, she kept the mask, she's wrestling with it, and it's eventually, like, that's why I thought the beginning of the, I didn't think sexual. I was thinking, like, yeah, the choking was like, you know, can you feel what it feels like to kill somebody again? And you'll become more and more numb to it. And then eventually you can do it easier. And I feel like that's the direction they're heading, but I could be so off.
Yeah.
I interrupted you. Sorry.
No. I'm just trying to, like, I'm trying to think where that would be in the comics.
Maybe it's not a comic thing.
I thought I heard that. Well, it's hard because I do think that there's like a, yeah, there is another Muse.
Okay. This is live research, by the way.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it because I was thinking it must be this. There was a Daredevil series that ran, I think, last year, kind of around the time Born Again season one came out, that featured a new Muse that was a woman, but it wasn't the Daredevil. It was kind of a mini, and it was focused on like Elektra Daredevil, not Daredevil. So I've read all of the issues of the actual main Daredevil comic, but this is the one I haven't read, and I do know it involves Muse. I don't know if Heather Glenn is the new Muse there, but the fact that that was introduced, and then now we have this going on.
Why would she keep the mask? Just practically speaking. It's happening.
Yeah. But then that's
just prepare yourself.
I mean, maybe it's something. It's like the reverse, where she like uses her role as a therapist to like get people in vulnerable positions, and then like,
you know, I will say that was one interesting thing about her mourning here in Vanessa's room, is she was talking about it, you know, if she was becoming a serial killer, I thought it was going to be a little more of like a, I don't know why I like this about myself or something. But instead, when she had a chance to double down, she was like really traumatized that she had to kill a patient.
Yeah.
So you're right. Like, it's maybe the other way, you know, somehow like really just the regret of that. And that doesn't, maybe the end of that road is not her being Muse, but there's a lot going on. I mean, in general, I felt like I took a note that everyone's kind of losing their mind. Like this is an episode where like it's coming to a head for everyone. Obviously Fisk depressed. Yeah. Matt's the only steady presence here, but Karen, we've never seen Karen like this. This is like Karen's going ballistic. She's literally going to shoot Bullseye in the head. And like, I think she was going to shoot him because Matt hit her gun out.
Although,
and she says right away, "What the hell is wrong with you?" to Matt.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "What is wrong with you, girl?"
But you still had that moment where she's picturing Foggy, and you can't tell if she's going to shoot him because she's picturing Foggy, or if she's not going to shoot him because she's picturing
Foggy.
Because
he wouldn't do that.
Right.
Right. But he lost it. Mr. Charles is kind of getting to the end of his rope. We'll talk about that in 1 second, is my guess.
Yeah.
Obviously the BB and Daniel thing coming to a head. And then the Heather scene was so strange. I'm thinking, man, everyone's becoming a psychopath. Other than Powell just freaking murdering Saunders. And I feeling like that was like a line that he felt like he could cross now, and there's no going back, you know, at the end of that.
Yeah.
So yeah,
a lot going on here. Oh, and by the way, yeah, I think finally we're seeing how Cole North gets his turn, because I remember thinking,
Oh, yeah.
Like, why are they?
He said, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, and I thought early on, like, okay, it seems like they're having this, like Saunders, this other guy, kind of play the Cole North role. And so then I wasn't sure if they were supposed to be working together or if there was some kind of other layer to it. But now I think
it's
just
that one line from him, didn't you? That's a good little hint.
Yeah.
It's also just refreshing to know that not everyone is fully bought in 100% to this.
Right. Because he straight up saw Powell shoot him, right?
Yeah.
So I think, man, yeah, I, I, I'm glad to see that they, and I knew that they did, but like to see the long game with North pan out, because I just always felt like it was going to be such a weird call if they used that character without using him for anything that the character actually represents. But the other piece of that, which again is a what worked, man, they have really made Powell just the most hateable guy.
The worst. Dude, like, shooting Saunders was dark.
I mean, the whole, it's almost like, you haven't watched Game of Thrones, but there are a couple of Game of Thrones villains that are just famously, like, they really make you hate these guys for how sadistic and cruel they are, but they keep getting away with it. And I feel like we haven't actually had that many of those in the MCU. Like, we've had really good villains, but often it's the flip side of that. Often it's like you understand them so much, like what we've talked about with like Thanos and Killmonger and Vulture. Like, you don't like hate Michael Keaton. You kind of understand him.
Yeah, right.
And so this is a really great little mini villain that has paired, like, to the point where I hate him way more than I hate Fisk in the show.
Oh, so do I. Okay, let's get into the last thing here. I think we're thinking the same thing. Just following up after a quick word from these sponsors.
Oh, by the way, this is a friend of mine.
I am Groot!
You save the good stuff for special occasions?
So, did I catch this right? Mr. Charles and his role here. There was a unique line.
Mm-hmm.
Jessica's telling the story that he came to her or to some people, quote, like them.
Yeah.
And I told him to F off. But not everybody like us did.
Yeah.
She said something to that nature, which makes me think, how does this affect the greater MCU? Well, is there more there? So is he working with Val? And is this a tie-in a little bit to like what the Thunderbolts have going? Like Sentry, or like, could they be referring to something like that? Or maybe somebody even like Luke Cage or something joins him instead of telling him to F off, according to Jessica. Is there more there? I think that's an interesting potential tie to, is Mr. Charles, who's so frustrated with Fisk now, is he going to form his own kind of army of, I guess, like government funded, like John Walkers of the world, essentially.
I mean, I think you're right. It has to be a reference to Val and what we find out she's been doing. I mean, even prior to Sentry, the fact that she has recruited.
Yeah. Like John Walker years ago.
And Ghost and, you know, like people with different levels of power sets. Now,
that's right.
I don't know how many superpowered people Jessica is supposed to know. Like I never, from the stuff that I saw, it was essentially characters that we've seen show up in the Defenders universe.
So, I mean, but she's aware of the big ones. Like she makes the reference to Captain America and the Hulk.
Yeah. You know? I mean,
but in this world, the Avengers are celebrities to all of them, right? So that's not news.
Yeah. I mean, the way she says not everyone I know, and you know, maybe she does know some of the characters that are in Thunderbolts. I do wonder if that's a Luke Cage nod, but man, that would be such a weird Luke turn to do something like that. Either way, I think you're right.
Also, are they together? Like, are they married and living together? Because if he does something like that, that's almost like he's an ex-husband or something.
Yeah.
Or just like a boyfriend that she doesn't see anymore. Strange.
Yeah, it doesn't. I feel like it doesn't seem like they are, but maybe they just, I guess they've been silent on it.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I don't think it's Luke Cage.
But I do think it's, and maybe that's all we get. But I think confirmation that Mr. Charles is connected to Val beyond just the formal CIA stuff. I wonder, in terms of where we're going next, to kind of go back to your very first comment about, you know, life after Fisk. The Zdarsky run, the midpoint of that run is Devil's Reign. That's not the conclusion.
Oh, okay.
And so it actually kind of goes on beyond that and really like ramps up a lot afterwards. And that's when it kind of becomes even more focused on Matt as leader and like what that looks like. You get a lot of stuff with like the hand at that point, for better or worse, in terms of TV adaptations. But one piece of that...
seems like the hand is coming again, you know? So
at least in Spider-Man.
That's what I mean.
But the... like one piece of that we've talked about some here is the... like the powers that are above Fisk, where you realize in the comics that Fisk as mayor, he is not, like, he still now has people that he has to answer to, kind of in a way that he never does as Kingpin. And they've done a really good job in this season of showing that tension with him and Charles. And I do wonder if the more Charles gets frustrated and like we have this kind of confrontation with Daredevil and Fisk, and it looks like that, like that's going to have to end one way or the other. Like maybe Fisk does step away for a while or something, and there's going to have to be kind of...
Sorry. Do you think he's going to step down? Do you think that's where we're heading? Like the false information that Daniel was leaking, do you think that's what's actually going to happen? Because something's going to happen, right?
He's not going to be
mayor by the end.
Well, aren't they sort of setting up the governor kind of forcing his hand? And I thought back to when we, you know, with the Brand New Day trailer, like seeing who I think his...
So he's going to get relieved of his powers.
I think that's at least what she's trying to do, right?
Yeah,
I mean, and now like they have this video out where they're saying that he's just been arresting random people. So you would think that at some point, like the governor already doesn't like him. Even before that, she's already said that without Vanessa there, she doesn't trust him in office. Yeah. So you would think that now she would... And that's what Charles
seems
to be setting up, right?
Buck's encouraging the other guy to kill her. Did you catch that line?
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah.
So is that a last-ditch effort to be like, make sure this governor gets out of here because she's anti my boss?
Yeah, but then even if that pans out, now Charles has gone straight to her, you know, ostensibly to get rid of Fisk. So even if they get rid of the governor and replace him or replace her with the lieutenant governor, I still think Charles would probably have something in the works to try to, like, there's going to be some sort of power struggle. And I just wonder if it's going to wind up with Daredevil actually taking on like the powers behind Fisk when this is all said and done, which would be interesting because it would be kind of the, like, we've never really seen him do that. Like, Fisk has kind of always been at the top of the food chain when it comes to Daredevil stuff, but
right,
it has to go somewhere.
Right. One question for our audience to think about this week. His name is Mr. Charles, but that's not actually his real name because when we're introduced to him, Fisk says, just call him Mr. Charles. That's fine.
Right.
I noticed Annika last night kept saying Charles and like you are now as if it's almost like his first name. And maybe it is. Maybe they're saying Mr. Charles. I don't know. Either way, it could be his first name, his last name, whatever. Is there a comic book character that he could be playing that they could reveal at the very end, like maybe in the next week, like he's actually like, my name's not Mr. Charles. It's, you know, Nick Fury. It's not Nick Fury, but like something right, like that, right, where comic fans are like, oh, that makes sense. Like that's why they didn't want to say his name. And so I don't know that, but just be thinking on that all week. You don't have to look up right now. I was going to pose it to our, to our audience?
No. That's a good question, though. I bet you're right. Because it does
they've
seem
intentionally
to be,
not revealed his name thus far.
Yeah. And they've kept him, like, we know very little about him. I thought at first that scene that you're referring to with Jessica talking to Matt, I actually thought that there was an implication that Charles was himself somehow like a powered person, like on like a low key level. And then I realized afterwards that's not what they're doing. They're just saying that he is involved in what Val does, I think.
I think so too.
It would be fun. I can't think of who he would be as a Daredevil character, but again, there are so many.
Might not have to be a Daredevil character.
That's the thing.
He could be the glue to the next, to Spider-Man or something else. The Thunderbolts, the Avengers.
And that's one more thing I wanted to raise that was not on, it didn't come out of this, although, you know, maybe it did a little bit with the connections to Val and the updates that we got that might allow the basically set the scene for Brand New Day. I was listening to the Amazing Spider Talk guy's reaction to the Brand New Day trailer.
Okay.
And Dan made a comment that I thought was interesting, and I'm curious how much like this is just purely his read versus if there's evidence to back it up, but he is convinced that Daredevil shows up in Brand New Day.
I mean it's not like
it would be impossible, right, but right, you know, because we know the Punisher is, so that's, they're already making that kind of move from
there's a huge online theory that the shot of Spider-Man going against the hand, that Daredevil is edited out of the bottom of that shot, just like they did with the three Spider-Men being edited out, because we got the shot of like Lizard kind of like moving in an unnatural way. It's because he was getting punched, and that's not in the thing. So there's a theory, and like we said on this podcast so many times, it's coming. I think they're already working on it. That's what I'm saying. I think it's already happening. So I'm with Dan. I think, I don't know if like specifically he is in that movie, but I think that this is the end game of all this. And they're working it out. In fact, I think they've worked most of it out, but this show was filmed a year ago. So now they're kind of like, you know, just getting to the edges that we're catching up.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
I mean, I am happy regardless of what all the connectivity that we're already getting just based on the trailer, I think is enough for me. I would be delighted if we actually get, I mean, again, we've had Daredevil in a Spider-Man movie.
Right. I'm kind of craving the inverse more than anything. I want Spider-Man on the show.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. Which also seems like a bigger lift and really expensive for them.
For sure. Will never happen, but yes.
But yeah, it would also be, it would be such a like a boon to Daredevil season 3 to have a Brand New Day appearance.
I guarantee you Disney would get a lot of subscribers.
Regardless, I am really happy even with just where we are now, like knowing what we do about Brand New Day, but also like this episode did a little bit more work, the kind of stuff that you and I have been looking for in so many projects post Endgame. Like there were all these, when there were way fewer projects in the MCU, they were more clearly connected. And then it felt like there were so many new opportunities that opened up after Endgame. And it seems like you and I have been saying over and over again since like 2022, like there's an opportunity for a connection that was weirdly missed. And like there's one and there's one and there's one. And most recently, it has been, it seems like what they're doing in Born Again should be kind of connecting on some level with what's going on in Thunderbolts. So seeing that happen here does feel like we're finally starting to like tie some things together that have needed to tie together for a while.
Get back home. It feels comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
Let's hear from a friend.
Yes! Hey, we know each other. He's a friend from work.
Our friend Yobel, Y-O-B-E-L, Yobel, I think that's right, says, hi, Kyle. Do you feel like the marketing push around Jessica Jones being in episode 6 was an intentional misdirection from the showrunners to throw the audience off of the events of the episode or an effort to further tie the Netflix Defenders lore to the greater MCU? Also, what did you think about her cameo? I love Jessica Jones and the whole Defenders saga, but the character's role was so brief in this episode that I couldn't help but wonder what the intention was to bring her in this late in the season, especially right after Vanessa's death, unless they had bigger plans for her later in season 2 or 3. I guess season 3. So she, love the podcast. Can't wait to hear the next episode. Keep up the good work. My reaction to that question is, one, yes. We talked about this. I think the marketing has been a little bit off. It's a little bit weird to have her be a part of the marketing, to have her only show up in episode 6 for 15 lines.
Yeah.
You know, and a fight, and a fight that kind of felt a little bit peripheral. Like, it was fun to see her and I love it, but a little bit like it was kind of like, hey, here's Jessica. She's going to beat up this warehouse and then leave. Like, what was,
Could
Daredevil not have done that by himself? Why at this exact second did it have to happen? Okay, that's my first reaction. My second reaction, though, is that I don't think she's gone yet, though. I think she's going to be in the final 2 episodes because there was definitely some shots of her in the trailer, unless that's intentional misdirection, that we're not in here. Remember when she's helping him up from the church? She says, like, are you going to, can you walk or do I have to carry you home or whatever? Or because I'm not carrying you home.
Yeah,
so we haven't seen that yet. So I think there's more coming. If there's not more coming, then it feels like that was a little bit peripheral. My only other pushback to that would be, but we did get the explanation of the Mr. Charles stuff that we just talked about.
Yeah.
So maybe it is a hint at the greater MCU connections, I guess. I did like seeing her.
Yeah. I think we're on the same page. I liked all the scenes with Jessica. I thought the introduction, like her house and hearing like the fight happening kind of outside and the guys like hitting the windows and all that was a fun intro or reintro. I do think that that's an interesting point though. Like maybe this is the beginning of a build towards something and we need to have Jessica here for that. In which case I think I'm totally fine with her coming in as kind of this transition episode of like a change in Fisk, the loss of Vanessa, and now we're sort of bringing in the component for the last arc. Like that feels right and natural. If it's not that, like if it's something where this was the big Jessica appearance and then maybe we only have kind of one other later one, it does feel kind of stitched on. Like it doesn't, like, I'm not totally sure, what happened here that needed Jessica in a way she wasn't needed, like, when they were breaking people out of the cells.
Right. Mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%. I think there has to be more, I think. Otherwise,
I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
For the file, let's rank it. I went first last week. Your turn to go first this week.
Wait, was I not supposed to watch it already?
You know what? I'm going to give it, I'll give it 4 out of 5 avocados. Cork?
I was raised by avocados.
Oh my God, just kill me now.
That's right.
That's right.
I think this is the B+ for me.
That's where I'm at too, B+. I was B- last week, yep. I think episode 4 for me is still an A-, just because, again, this is where the preference thing, Rob. Yeah, I talked about this on the rankings. Like, just seeing Jack having a tie into Hawkeye.
Yeah.
That, and then that fight was also really awesome. Was just the sauce to put it into the A- category for me. That's the only one I've given an A-.
Yeah.
And I thought this was really good. And I like this as a pretty, for me, significant jump over last week.
Mm-hmm.
So B- to B+. But I don't know that I go on the same.
I didn't have the same feeling as like my wife going like, yeah, about like yeah. Jack breaking people out and stuff. So B plus.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's close for me. Like that, because if only because of that Fisk fight at the end.
Yeah. And the talking, I love the talking.
Yeah. Like that scene was so great, but yeah, I think there's just something like that. If I'm going by my own kind of emotional, like visceral reaction to it, which is on some level all I can do whenever I'm trying to assign this a grade.
Right.
I still think like the way I felt after episode 4, where I was like, this is like, I'm jazzed. Like, yeah, I think this episode I came away being like, wow, that was really good.
Yep,
but this show is
really good, man. Wow.
Yeah,
I think I went. I think I've gone B minus, B, B plus, A minus, B minus, B plus. So like kind of a growth, a little dip, and then we're back. And I've heard nothing but unbelievable things about the final two. So
yeah,
It'll be interesting when we're all said and done to look back at this, because I do feel like this is going to be one of the three best shows they've ever made. And I say that as someone who just finished Loki season 1, then watched Quantumania, and now I'm about to start Loki season 2. My recollection of Loki season 2 is that it's an A, like it's a top tier thing that they've made. That remains to be seen. I got to rewatch it. I haven't ever rewatched it, so we'll see. But I rewatched Loki season 1. I think clearly Loki season 1 is not in that category. And I love Loki season 1. I think the first episode of Loki season 1 and the 6th episode of Loki season 1 are absolutely special. The 3 in the middle are kind of just like okay episodes of television.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that about this. So my point is Daredevil I think is better than Loki season 1. So I think you're in the conversation for me of WandaVision and we'll see Loki season 2.
Yeah, I think it would be great if we never have to do this, but I think in some ways it's a hard show for us to introduce a grading scale on, because I just think every episode has been so good.
Yeah, sure. Like Loki and, season 1, if we had the grading system, I probably would have given out some lower grades.
Like I think it'll be interesting to see if we have to do that with other shows. But right now, I mean, it's a good problem to have. But I think
that's where the preference thing comes into play, because I think that this show's been more consistent. And the end of episode 4 of this show got really close, but the science fiction talk in the Loki finale is just always going to be more my preference. That's an A to me.
Yeah.
Like I could watch it for an hour where they're just talking and Loki's having to process what he's hearing.
Yeah, and the Hiddleston, Jonathan Majors.
But because it's also just like just so out there, they're talking about like metaphysical stuff. That's more my scene.
Yeah.
Like where is this going? Time travel, you know. So like that's a true A. So that's why I'm saying like A minus, I guess, for episode 4, just cuz you know that little preference. Okay, we got to go. We're going to watch the Punisher special presentation trailer and then record a Friends from Work Plus episode. So if you want to hear our reaction to that, go check out Friends from Work Plus. Robbie, anything else in life as we close here? How should I wrap us up? What's new? Anything I need to know about?
I think there's just a lot of doomsday buzz these days.
The CinemaCon fallout has been magnificent to witness.
Yeah. They're going to be a Hall H at SDCC again, which is fun and probably going to generate some more buzz. The Endgame re-release is something we haven't talked about on the show.
Yeah, but, and we'll definitely be covering. I think you and I will probably go to it. And
because apparently it's going to now have new footage that ties into Doomsday. Did you see
this? But apparently only after the credits, I think. I don't think they're like changing the movie. I think it's a post-credits scene because Endgame didn't have one.
Oh, interesting.
I think.
Here's the reality.
It's been so long since I felt the way I did pre-Avengers Endgame, because that was literally 7 years ago. And like, as far as I love all of the MCU, but counting the experiences that like I'll never forget, you know, like some of the most foundational movie experiences of my life include like the Infinity War thing and probably Civil War towards the end, the first time I saw Iron Man, and then Endgame. In theory, I've been excited about Doomsday, right? Like I say that because I'm excited about an Avengers movie and what it could mean. Something has shifted in me this last week. Like I saw, Robbie, I saw just the last 10 seconds of the trailer, which is just the Doomsday logo with Alan Silvestri's music.
Oh,
and
wow.
I'm going to send it to you. Full blown. Like my point is I am now not just like theoretically excited. I'm starting to feel what I felt like. Like seeing Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans on stage, hearing that song, then the reaction to it, like every outlet being like, it brought the house down to where everybody was like, oh, this, even like non-Marvel people are like, oh, but they're still king. Like this is why. Because like here's all these other trailers. Look how fun this is. Like Toy Story 5, Tom Hanks, and you know, they're all here and it's so cool. But then the real big boys are coming to play here. And that's Marvel. That feeling, I have chills right now, is growing in me like it hasn't in like 7 or 8 years. The music, Robbie, he changes the second to last chord like we always talk about. So it's bum, 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 bum. And then this chord is like a minor chord.
Oh, so
it's
like, man,
it's really dark. I chilled. Look at my body. Full-blown goosebumps. I'm going to send it to you. When I heard that chord, I was like, this is what I've always talked about. It's like a bigger version of it, a little more synthy. And then this dark minor chord over the last part of the melody, that, and then it just says, Doom is coming. Boom, 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 with the music. And I was like, holy.
I can't wait to see that trailer. I have avoided the...
I don't know the description either.
Yeah, I've avoided that stuff just because it sounds like such a fun thing to see.
When you hear the music, you're going to lose your mind because as a musician, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Holy crap.
We've got to get Silvestri on the show. It's got to happen.
Yeah, we haven't really efforted that. We need to make that happen. Anyways, that's a long tangent to say. Do you know what I mean? Like there's a real juice now for me. Real.
Yeah, no, agreed. And I think a lot of like, I think that's going to show up for a lot of people. I think people have forgotten how fun that is. Like I've said before, there have been some great, great movies over the last 6 years, 7 years, but we have not really had, something like this. Yeah, like a big installment of a series. Like we have had moments, but nothing like this. And I think people miss it.
Here's what's so important. CinemaCon, Robbie, is for movie theater people. Did you know this? CinemaCon is not fans.
Oh, right.
This is not Comic-Con. This is like people who run movie theaters basically go and hear the presentations of like, here's what you can expect for your movie theater. So my point is these are not people who are predisposed to having to like this.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right. No, I mean, and like, especially
they lost their mind so much that they said, play the trailer again. Right. They like demanded a second viewing of it right then and there. And these are, so my point is, I think what happened was, you're right. I think people, even casuals, have forgotten how fun it is. Like that you literally had a movie that was making people stand up and applaud or cheer in the, like people would cheer when Mjolnir moved for Captain America. Like, and I think even the most casual or like even the Marvel hater has to admit like that is fun when theaters are totally full and we all are going through this shared moment together. And I think this trailer is a reminder of like, like this is why it is good. It's good for everybody. I'm going to cry. Well, I'm so happy. No,
well, and you know, I just think I've said this before, but these narratives evolve so quickly. And I think people now look back at 2018 as this like, oh, you know, everyone loved Marvel and it could do no wrong when Infinity War came out. And I, you know, part of that I think is Black Panther doing what it did. And obviously the movies were making tons of money. But again, I very much remember going and seeing Infinity War and being so excited about it and still feeling like a lot of people were like, oh, like the Avengers movie, you know, like Marvel, like this sort of like, and then Endgame happened and it was such a big deal that it now kind of recolored all of it. And now all of these non-nerds in my life suddenly cared and wanted to rewatch and listen to our podcast. And then it was the big thing. But my point is, it took the right moment, like what you're talking about, to transform either like casual fans or like not even fans into people that suddenly got it and cared about it so much so that they were willing to go back and watch 18 movies or whatever it was.
Like my dad.
Yeah. And so I think that there's this idea that like, oh, they've got a real uphill battle to win back all this trust. And I'm just not sure that that's as much the case as people make it out to be, because they make it seem as though like Endgame was inevitable. Like it was just gonna be a huge hit. Yeah. And that they just kind of like, it was a softball or something. And, you know, the whole reason this podcast exists is because we felt like it was such an achievement to land the plan the way that they did. But that's why I've always felt that, like, as much as I think that, yeah, you should get new voices involved and new creators and do interesting things like we're getting with Thunderbolts now kind of leading to a team to make X-Men. Like, I think...
Yeah, Jake.
That's great. And we need that moving forward. But there is just... You cannot deny the unique abilities that the Russos have when it comes to these big team-up event movies. Like they can do something and balance stuff in a way that I've just never seen other filmmakers nail. And so I think to get those folks back together and these actors that get it and love it and Silvestri, it does get me excited because I think they know how to do it.
Yes, they do. And we know how to do it. We'll see you next week here on Friends from Work.